I call Senate Resources Committee meeting to order. Today is Monday, March 16th, 2026, and the time is 3:30 p.m. Please turn off your cell phones. Members present today, Senator Rauscher, Senator Kawasaki, Senator Dunbar, Senator Klayman, and myself, Senator Giesel. Senator Myers is excused today, and Senator Wilikowski is in another committee presenting a bill. We have a quorum to conduct business. Thank you to Heather and Chloe, who are keeping track of the minutes and making sure our audio works. We have three bills before us today. Senate Bill 224, Public Land Sale Lease Commercial Development, but that will be followed by Senate Bill 230, Jonesville Public Use Area, and Senate Bill 200 will be last, Farm and Agriculture Land Assessments. I'm going to allot 30 minutes to each of these pieces of legislation, and that will include public testimony. So first up, Senate Bill 224. This is the second hearing of this bill, and so I will invite Christy Coles, and who is here in the room, to come forward to give us a brief overview of the bill. Also online is Jim Walker, Section Chief, Division of Mining, Land, and Water, Department of Natural Resources. Also online for questions is Christopher Orman. He is an Assistant Attorney General, Department of Resources Section, Department of Law. He's available for questions. So Ms. Coles, if you would like to give us a brief overview of the bill.
Great. Thank you. For the record, this is Christy Collis. I am the director for the Division of Mining, Land, and Water. Thank you for having me here today to quickly give an overview of what this bill does. I know we had presented more in depth on March 9th. So there's five major components of this bill. Housekeeping for land sales. We want to move contracts from a 20-year contract to 30, and that's going to help folks with a lower payment, more time to pay off the contract for land sales. We want to change some terminology from foreclosure to termination because we're not a bank. We're also going to reorganize the statutes a little bit just for clarity. Leasing, we're looking to have some changes to the way that we require surveys. Right now, the way the statute's written, a short-term lease doesn't require a survey, but a long-term lease that's anything over 10 years does require a survey, which can be very cost prohibitive for folks, especially if they want something more long-term to bring to a bank for financing for infrastructure. And then we're also going to look at repealing some outdated boundaries for some state game refuges, Kenai Moose Range and the Kodiak Wildlife Refuge. As we stated before, these are refuges that were created back in the day when we were putting a state refuge on top of federal lands. Over time, state has gained some of those lands, and we'd like to remove that on the state lands. And then we have the repeal of Business Park Wetlands. That is some land in Anchorage. That's 3 acres that is encumbered by legislation that stops us from being able to do other things with that land. And it is at this point just a nuisance piece of property that we have to spend quite a bit of money on every year. And we'd love to do something like work with the municipality to be able to have them utilize that land for other uses. And then the last piece is our commercial business parks. And that's where we're looking to do a little bit of that front loading of a public process, a decision process, to be able to market those lands to businesses that are coming to Alaska to say, this has been through the process. We have these lands available. They've gone to the public. Their communities are aware of them. And it helps us to be able to get new opportunity up to Alaska for businesses.
Very good. Ms. Coles, I know that we certainly have heard from the public. There's some confusion about the state game refuges, that this would get rid of the Kenai National Moose Refuge and the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge. Could you clarify what exactly the bill proposes to do related to those refuges?
Chair Giesel, I would love to call on Chris Orman to talk a little bit more about this, just because it's a lot of legalese that he could speak to.
All right, that'd be great. Mr. Orman, did you hear my question, and could you respond?
Senator Giesel, for the record, Christopher Orman, I did hear your question, and if I don't answer it, because us lawyers can sometimes go down rabbit holes, please, please stop me and ask me again. But I'll do my best. So what ended up happening is in 1960, there were these federal refuges that were created under, obviously, by the federal government. The concern at the time in 1960 was that the federal government may end up changing its treatment and its care for those refugees. And, it, you know, it's interesting looking back that it very much crystallized kind of this state rights versus federal rights kind of argument issue before the legislature at that time. So given those concerns, what they decided to do was create what they would call state refuges that would be the exact same footprint as the federal refuge, okay? And so that's where you have this, like, list of these refuges in that 1620 statute. So what would end up happening here is with this repeal, the state refuge would go away, but the federal refuge would remain. The federal refuge can't be taken away by this state legislation. The protections that would exist under the, you know, for those federal refuges would remain. You know, all that would be removed is, you know, the state refuge, which, you know, Ms. Collis can speak to this. To the best of my knowledge, there are no, like, regulations or other statutes and statutory protections as far as from DNR standpoint, Department of Natural Resources standpoint, protecting, you know, the state lands within the refuge. In other words, there's no additional protections on top of the federal protections that exist for these lands. That right now, it's almost like I said, this was a placeholder that was passed in 1960 in the event the federal government did something weird here and wasn't going to protect the lands under the federal refuge, then presumably the state could have stepped in and added its protection. I hope that answers the question. If not, let me know.
That seems great. Senator Rauscher, thank you. I'm sorry. Okay. Senator Rauscher,
No worries. You
wanted to follow up with a question?
I did. I really appreciate it. And I did want to follow up on this particular topic. So the fear, through the chair, my understanding is the fear is federal refuges would or could go away. And so I'm wondering if that's correct. And then the question that comes to mind is, what is the process? Is it Congress? What's the process for that to actually happen?
Senator Rauscher, Christopher Orman again for the record, through the chair. So some of the changes to these refuges and some of the protections have been by executive order, by regulation. I would have to go back and double check some of that legislation. I haven't looked at that in a while, so I apologize for that. But my memory is that, like, for example, the size of the refuge has changed over time. The name of the refuge has changed over time, and that was by executive order and by then a federal register. So, you know, based on my review, at least this morning, and what I understand, then what we would be looking at is, you know, like a federal APA, you know, administrative procedure process to adopt regulations that would have those effects and those changes.
So,
follow up, Senator Rauscher.
So I'm not sure what the bill is going to do today, whether it leaves the committee or not, but could you find out and put a letter in for the next committee on the process of how that actually happens and how it has happened in the past, which has given us cause to worry, if you would. Thank you.
That would be great, Mr. Orman. The bill is not moving out of this committee today, so you can certainly send the response to my office. I know that we have a response from DNR that committee members should have in their packet, and it was a question Senator Kawasaki asked about rules and protections for animals, if they would be gone, and the answer was, looks like pretty much no. The protections would remain in place for the animals in the Kenai Moose Refuge and the Kodiak Game Refuge. Senator Klayman, did I see you had a question also?
I do have a couple of questions.
Senator Klayman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So as I understand, the proposal is that these are currently technically both a state refuge and a federal refuge, and the proposal is that we get rid of the state refuge because there's a federal refuge there. Who's managing the refuge today if it's both state and federal?
Through the chair and for the record, Christy Collis, Senator Klayman, Fish and Game manages the critters, and then DNR manages the land, but there's not any kind of special protections or special rules for those lands outside of the fact that it's listed in Title 16. Now, what the federal government does with their lands when it comes to how they manage it, I'm unsure of exactly what that looks like. But it doesn't, we don't manage on each other's lands. I think, you know, Fish and Game obviously manages the critters. I can't speak for them on exactly how that works, but, and we don't have anyone online today.
Follow up, Senator Klayman.
So does that mean the state is actually spending money today in managing the state refuge, which is maybe not exactly, but largely identical to the federal refuge?
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, no one's really actively managing it. So there's no regulations. There's nothing different that we're doing with the lands. It's just it's got this encumbrance in the statute because the way that the state refuge was implemented was at the time when the national refuge was much larger. And then when they pulled back that national refuge, we were able to select some of those lands and they became state land. And then we thought over time that we were able to say that that refuge, state refuge, no longer existed, or that we could work with Fish and Game to be able to manage the lands under Title 38 and Title 29, which is municipal entitlements. But recently we were told no, because at the time the state refuge was implemented, it was larger. We could still be encumbered by that state game refuge, which is really not being actively managed by Fish and Game or DNR.
Senator Klayman, and for the audience listening, I draw your attention to slide 4 in their presentation the other day, which shows you the overlay maps that show how the federal refuge has shrunk. But we've got peripheral land that's still under state management. Next question, Senator Klayman.
And then my other query is, if we'd pass this legislation and so the state refuge effectively disappears, and then by whatever federal process, the federal refuge also disappears, the state having given up its refuge before the federal gave up its refuge, does the state have the option at that point to come back in and say, well, the feds are leaving, we want to keep the refuge for our own purposes? Or are we giving up that option too if we get rid of the refuge in this legislation? The state refuge, I should say.
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, I would say that we would have to go back and decide if that's something that Fish and Game would want to have a refuge back on those federal lands, if there's any kind of benefit for Fish and Game. I can't really speak for Fish and Game. We have worked with them, and they have told us they do not have concerns with us repealing this particular statute within Title 16 for Kodiak and for Kenai.
Okay. Senator Klayman, I will have my staff make a pointed request to Fish and Game to be available for when we hear the bill again. But I wish I had my ANILCA book here with me, but I believe these two were established in ANILCA, which would be a significant change for the federal government. Next up was Senator Kawasaki.
Yeah, thanks. And I guess I wish Fish and Game were here too. I'm just looking at Title 16 and for the Kenai and Kodiak refuges. It says in Title 16, it talks about legislative recognition, and this is where the language comes from. The special recognition of the value of to the state and the nation of areas, unspoiled habitat, and the game characteristics to it should be demonstrated by designating this refuge. It goes on to state the purpose is to, under Title 16, protect and preserve the natural habitat and game population in the designated areas of the state. And then these are two of the, I don't know, 14 or so that are listed in here. So I guess I heard the answer to the question, meaning that the state refuge, there's no particular rules about the state refuge that would be omitted if it would just, we would just fall under the federal, but there are some further discussions about how you would submit plans to the commissioner of Department of Fish and Game if there's going to be any lease or disposal of real property within that region. It also talks about the public's ability to see plans of proposed construction work and then specifications for proper protection of the fish and game in that area. It looks to me if this were removed, then the remaining portions of the Kenai Moose Range and the Kodiak National Wildlife Range would not be subject to that title anymore. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, I think that would be a great question again for Chris Orman.
Mr. Orman?
Senator Kawasaki, through the chair, this is Christopher Orman for the record, Department of Law. So one of the things to keep in mind that's really important here is that what you're pointing to, like the planning and kind of these issues, is has to be in there because we're in Title 1620. So in other words, some of the aspects of the Alaska Land Act, 3805, 3804, I think back in the day, there was a concern that some of that process within the Alaska Land Act wouldn't apply or would be missed as far as the management of these areas. So, this is a long-winded way, and I'll defer to Ms. Cullis. She can kind of talk about process a little bit. But, you know, with this removal, those now state lands are going to be managed pursuant to 3804 and 3805, and thus the Alaska Land Act. And so these kind of, you know, having plans, preparing plans, undertaking management plans, land classifications under 3804 as far as the appropriate use of the lands, all of those considerations would still be necessary prior to, you know, the state DNR deciding to, you know, undertake any potential use or disposal of the lands. So I do think what you're seeing, you know, just to be really blunt here, is that some of this in 1620, I think, is adopting kind of some of those provisions from the Alaska Land Act to make sure that, you know, because we're in a separate and a different title, to make it really clear that, you know, DNR has those tools and needs to kind of still undertake those Alaska Land Act tools. I hope that makes sense.
Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess not as clear. It looks like under Title 1620, you need to submit plans. There's public involvement. It's the responsibility. You shall notify the Commissioner of Fish and Game for all of these land use changes or potential sales or potential transfers of ownership. And it looks like if it's not there, is it somewhere else? Is it in the Alaska Land Act where that's required? And then is it no longer required for the Fish and Game Commissioner to be part of that discussion? Because it looks like there to be required part of the discussion that you're managing for the fish and game populations.
And apologies, Senator Kawasaki, for being rude. I'm on the phone here, not in person, so apologies for stomping on your toes a little bit there. Senator Kawasaki, through the chair. So, again, I'll defer to Ms. Collis, but under 3804, 005 requires DNR to consider and undertake certain reviews of its general state land to determine the best uses of the land. It's required to undertake management plans and complete management plans for its lands. It's required to classify its lands. I believe, and there's even a management plan that's in place here. Those management plans require coordinating with fish and game and others, keeping in mind that DNR doesn't have authority over fish and game, the critters, to use Ms. Collins' language. So therefore, they're going to naturally engage with Alaska Department of Fish and Game regarding, you know, questions about, you know, the management of the fish and game. 3805 then is the Alaska Land Act itself, and there's all sorts of requirements, as you've probably heard time again through various hearings, about, you know, whether it's best interest findings, lease determinations, issues, public notice requirements prior to issuances of easements, all of which, by the way, those types of decisions require or not require, but are usually piggybacking off of the management plans that DNR has completed. Is it appropriate for a disposal of these lands, depending on what the management plans ends up saying, or the classification of the land and the classification determination? So I guess, you know, in response to the question, you know, and sorry to confuse, but I do believe that some of that language and some of this about plans that are in 1620 is like, I know you were just citing to 1620.050 and 1620.060 for the record. A lot of that, I believe, is in 1620 to reinforce that DNR is going to still, you know, utilize some of its 3805, its Alaska Land Act tools when managing the lands under 1620. You repeal those, you know, these refuges, the Alaska Land Act, because then it's general state land, it's still going to apply to these lands. It's still now going to apply in full force. 3804 and 3805 will still apply.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Director Collis, for this conversation. I think I actually misunderstood what the bill did initially. Because of the way the maps are structured, I thought what we were doing was making the state refuges coterminous with the federal refuges. And then the lands that fell outside that would no longer be encumbered. But instead, we're abolishing this range and this refuge. So my question is, why not do it the other way? Why not just shrink the borders to be exactly where the federal government is? Then you've unencumbered the lands that you're interested in while maintaining that state backstop to the federal refuges.
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, great question. And it's something we did debate a lot on whether or not it was really appropriate for us to continue to have that state game refuge on top of the federal refuge. That was a decision that we made, a policy call, I guess you could say, working with Fish and Game and just trying to figure out, too. It's a very difficult legal description to try to change it back to where the feds are. It's a lot of work to try to figure out how to get that just right. So we didn't see, I guess, the value added by having it over top of the National Wildlife Refuge, but I do completely understand your line of questioning on that one.
Follow up, Senator Dunbar?
No, Madam Chair. Well, I'll just say I understand that if you had to specify every nook and cranny, I could see how that would be difficult. Could you not say something like, at this time, the refuge has exactly the borders of the federal refuge, and then only do that detailed mapping if the federal government decides to change the boundaries again? Is that legally possible? I guess it's more a question for the drafters than for you.
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, yes, that would be a question for the drafters on if that's something we could do within the bill. I'm unsure.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. We do have – welcome, by the way. Senator Wilikowski has had opportunity to join us. Thank you, Ms. Collis. We do have invited testimony of Bob Dole. He is the Director of Community and Economic Development at the Municipality of Anchorage. There's an element in the bill that refers to business park wetlands. There's specifically a location in Midtown Anchorage. This was elaborated on slides 7 and 8 of the original presentation. So we invited Mr. Dole to speak to us about the municipality and whether they're interested in working with DNR on relinquishing this piece of land. So, Mr. Dole, welcome to Senate Resources. If you would identify yourself for the record and give us your thoughts.
Thank you, Senator Diesel. For the record, Bob Dole, Community of Economic and Community Development for the Municipality of Anchorage. I want to thank the DNR staff for drawing this matter to our attention. Business Park Wetlands has not turned out as planned when the municipality originally conveyed this property to DNR. The nonprofit organization that was expected to administer it is defunct with no one stepping in, and in its stead, DNR faces a disproportionate drain on its resources to deal with the issues presented by this tiny tract. There's a significant off-site impacts resulting from the occupants of the trespass camps right now that are in Business Park Wetlands. These affect the neighborhoods around it in Midtown Anchorage. DNR is not really resourced to dealing with these. The Municipality of Anchorage is interested in this property. We urge consideration of conveying it back to the municipality. We have the staffing and funding to abate the trespass camps and reconveying this property to us will empower us to use our resources to take on this nuisance property and eliminate the nuisance and get some level of beneficial use from it. I'm ready for your questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dole. Are there questions for Mr. Dole? Seeing none, thank you very much for joining us today and that very clear communication about the municipality's position. Thank you. All right, further questions for Ms. Collis or Mr. Orman? Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you. Can you tell me where in this bill it specifically talks about this little part in Anchorage Is there a citation in here, or is it one of the repealers? And then I have a second question on just Title 38 generally. Is Title 38, 05-400, these commercial development parks anticipated for more than just Anchorage? And so could you use that section for places in Fairbanks or Juneau or Kenai, for instance?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki. So Section 16 calls out all of the areas that would be repealed. So on top of Title 16, which is the refuge, the wildlife refuges that we'd like to repeal, it also has Title 41, which is Business Park Wetlands. And then there's a session law under Title Section 17. And we did provide that information in the packet that was provided back to you. The session law. And then to answer the other question for commercial business parks, yes, I mean, that's statewide, so there should have also been some maps included in your packet for all of the lands classified settlement, which is about 3,200,000 acres statewide. We would be able to utilize any of those lands through our public process, through our decision process, kind of identify what's appropriate for commercial versus residential.
Yes, and those maps were provided by the department on March 13th and were sent to committee members. There are two maps included. Follow-up, Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so I've seen these maps, and it's got like the entire state and then little blue dots next to little places. And I just don't know exactly where those are. And so my only concern is that if these are potentially we're using this new title for business parks, that it's in a place that the person doesn't want a business park, for instance, because a lot of these places seem rural or remote. Some of them seem like the ones around Fairbanks, surrounding area, might be convenient, but also might be in somebody's backyard. And I'm just curious how that Title 38 would work for a place that's maybe not suited for it, or in whether those people have been contacted, really.
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki. So they've been contacted in the sense of when we went through the planning process, we were able to identify areas and classify them in the area plan. So all sorts of different classifications that we have: habitat, we have settlements, we have forestry, we have mineral. So we go through this process, and a lot of our area plans take a couple of years. And so we finalize a plan, and then we put it out. Well, all that means is that's what it's classified for through that process. But we still have to go through Title 38 process, and these commercial parks would still have a public notice of a preliminary decision that would go out, and we would hear from those folks to say, this is a terrible area, and here's why. We think you should maybe go over here, or have you thought about this area? There could be an area that maybe everyone would think would be great that isn't classified settlement, but we'd have to go through a whole classification of that land. That's a decision process as well. So the public is going to be involved along the way and have appeal rights at the end of that decision. They could appeal to the commissioner, say, we disagree with the department's decision to allow this area to be business parks. And if the commissioner upholds our decision, it can go to court. And so we have plenty of these that we've been in court or litigation over for settlement areas just for residential for years. And it just depends on whether or not we really think there's value in continuing that fight with whoever might not want it. Because sometimes it can be just an individual that just doesn't want to have neighbors.
Sure. Thank you.
Very good. So thank you very much for the overview. And I think you've given committee members some things to think about. At this time, I'm going to open public testimony. Is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify on Senate Bill 224? I don't see anyone online either. So at this time, I'm going to close public testimony. We can certainly open it again later. I'm going to set the bill aside in it right now. I'm not setting an amendment deadline until we hear from ADF&G, Fish and Game. I know people had a lot of questions there, and it may give you some additional thoughts about amendments. So at this time, we'll simply set the bill aside, bring it up again later, but you can be thinking about possible amendments. All right, that takes us to the first hearing of a new bill. That's Senate Bill 230, Jonesville Public Use Area. And so at this time, I will invite Senator George Rauscher, if he would like to go to the table, or he can sit where he is right now. And Isabel Ordaz, his staff, to come forward and present the bill here in person for questions. This is Christy Colas, Director of the Division of Mine, Land, and Water from DNR. Welcome, Senator Rauscher.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Madam Chair and Vice Chair Wilkowski and members of the Senate Community and, Senate Resources Committee. My name is, for the record, George Rauscher, Senator George Rauscher, District O, and that's from Valdez all the way to the Pasfili. So before diesel, coal ran steamships, the war effort, heated cities of Anchorage and Palmer, and put the town of Sutton, Alaska on the map as the biggest supplier of coal available. As diesel replaced coal, and soon Evan Jones closed down his coal mine, located a few thousand feet above the town of Sutton, Alaska. The mine workers living in Mr. Jones' self-named area of Jonesville now populated the town of Sutton that grew into what it is today along the Glen Highway just north of Palmer. In 2006, the Mining Reclamation Act of 1977 gave the state of Alaska $9 million, which they put toward reclamation of the Jonesville coal mining area where the strip mining and tunnel shafts were vacated. The project, led by Joe Werman of the DNR, put out the still smoldering underground coal fires, flattened the old landing strip, and placed 20 fire ring campsites along it. The project included widening and fortifying the web of coal mining trails to build solid gravel roads accommodating large motorhomes and parking areas for thousands of visitors expected to use the area, inviting everyone to come and enjoy the 14,614 acres of abandoned coal mining leases. The one thing the state did not do for these thousands of new visitors was to design a management plan, as asked for by the Sutton Community Council back then. The Jim Creek area in Butte just underwent a management plan to stop the lawlessness of car burning, shooting of all hours of the night, all directions, garbage dumping, drug parties, hikers, four-wheelers, all that kind of danger at the time. So this newly designed area right above the town of Sutton was now the new dumping ground for cars to be hauled up there and burned, garbage to be dumped everywhere, trees to be mowed down by semi-automatic and automatic weapons, and Tannerite bombs. Bullets were now hitting cars and houses and folks that lived as far as a mile away from the area. The bathrooms that were actually put up there by the Matsubara were shot to pieces. There's a photo in your packet. Porta potties were thrown in the lakes. Drug needles were now everywhere. Boats were set on fire to burn in the lake. Drug needles, the pavilion placed by the Matsubara was shot up until there was nothing left of the uprights that held it up there, and it had to be removed. Every year, the members of the community of Sutton cleaned that mess up in the spring at their own cost. Usability Coal Mine Crews Construction also helped with the cleanup in the past. As many as 8 20-foot containers of garbage were used to clean it up just 4 years after it went into effect. Okay, and this continued year after year. In 2018, HB 6, some of you may remember, was passed by a unanimous 60 votes, which allowed the Jonesville area to become a public use area and could now have its own needed management plan written by the DNR. It will never give the life back to the man who was killed by mistake as he wandered unknowingly between a shooter and his target, or help the teen who received a stray bullet to the leg who was in a group of kids having fun up there, or help little kids getting hit by four-wheelers running out of control in that camping area. But hopefully the residents a few hundred feet away can stop living in fear of stray bullets hitting their houses and Tannerite bombs going on all hours of the night, blowing up cars and trees. So what does this bill, SB 230, do? One piece of state land that was accidentally left off the survey, the DNR gave us in HB 6 legislation that was passed, is in it. It is on the map in your folder. It is right near the lake, contains part of the cleared gravel parking area, and is closer to the private land and houses than the bulk of the already included Jonesville public use area, and must also be managed. If not, this creates a dangerous situation for campers in the area, nearby homeowners. It escapes the no trash dumping regulations and organized regulated shooting allowed in the public use area. Page 2, line 24 is the change, just in case you're wondering. The entirety of it all is about page 2, line 24. I hope this committee will see the importance of the bill passing and working with members of the community in Sutton to ensure the Jonesville public area will work for the safety and peace of mind. My staff, Isabel Ortiz, will she'll give you the overview of the sectional, if you would.
Thank you, Senator Rauscher. Ms. Ordaz.
For the record, Isabel Ortiz, staff to Senator Rauscher, and I'll be reading the sectional. So Section 1 amends AS41.23.286, the Jonesville Public Use Area. Section 1 updates the statutory boundary description of the Jonesville Public Use Area. Section 2 provides for an immediate effective date, and we do also have an invited testimony.
Yes, and your invited testimony, Chris Spitzer, is online. He is the former chair of the Sutton Community Council. So we'll call on him now, if that's all right.
Sure.
Mr. Spitzer, welcome. If you would identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Yep. Thank you, Chair and members of the State Resource Committee. My name is Chris Spitzer, and as was mentioned, I live in Sutton. I've lived there for about 13 years. During that time, I served on the council, and that was including when the Jonesville Public Use Area was legislatively established. I also served on the Jonesville Public Area Management Planning Committee. I'm calling today to support this bill, Senate Bill 230. The Jonesville Public Use Area was created so people could continue to enjoy recreation there. As was mentioned, things like shooting, snow machining, off-roading, hunting, access to the backcountry, all those things, while also respecting the nearby private property owners and trying to maintain safety while all those activities happen. So this boundary adjustment, as listed in E230, it really just clarifies the original intent. It helps make sure higher risk activities stay further away from the homes while still preserving the public's ability to use the area the way it's been used for a very long time. From my perspective, this is not about restricting recreation. It's about making sure the public use area continues to function the way it was intended when the public use area was created. Based on my involvement with the community council and the management planning process, I believe this technical boundary clarification is consistent and necessary for the original intent of the public use area. I appreciate the committee's time, and I do encourage you to support this bill. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Spitzer. Committee members, do any of you have questions for Mr. Spitzer? All right, seeing none. Other questions for the bill sponsor or Christy Colas, who is here as well for questions? Senator Klayman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this is for Senator Rauscher. Looking specifically at the map, and I see Detail A and Detail B. Are we essentially in Detail A, are we taking that block out and putting the new boundary where the green line is and the boundary would no longer be the pink line?
Yeah, Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, Senator Rauscher. So, yes, I'm glad you asked the question. Now, there is a letter that we did not get quick enough from the Matsu Borough, okay, explaining why we're taking a section out. The section that we're taking out belongs to the Matsu Borough. It got included, and we really can't regulate Matsu Borough land. They can regulate their own according to what the parameters of whatever is, written for regulations by the DNR. They can regulate their own, but the DNR does not really own that particular piece of property. So it had to come out while the other section is going in for the reasons that we stated earlier.
Follow-up, Senator Clayman?
So in short, Detail A is land being removed from the public use area, and Detail B is land being added to the public use area.
Senator Rauscher.
Senator Rauscher, through the chair. No, it's opposite. Section B is being removed, and Section A is what we're trying to add.
Okay, thank you.
Because if you look through at the photo, it's a big, large parking area in section detail A. All right. Now, that parking area got omitted. And you could probably park maybe 300 motorhomes, cars there. Or you can pull a bunch of junk cars, set them on fire while everybody's not there. And so that needs to be included.
Thank you, Senator Rauscher. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate your work on this. I fished at Jim Creek years ago, and I remember seeing it was unbelievable, seeing cars shot up, cars set on fire, pushed into the river. So I'm glad to hear that's working out there. But I had a similar question on Section 21 and why that was omitted, because it was consciously omitted last time around. And maybe just a little more clarification so I can understand that. It sounds like Section 15, the change was because that's Matsu property, and that's understandable. The 21 is not entirely clear why that was omitted originally.
Senator Rauscher?
I misunderstand.
My understanding is it was just completely overlooked by the DNR. When we were asked for the bill to be drafted, we said, because I'm not a surveyor, we went to them and they provided the coordinates that are on that you'll see in the bill. And apparently they didn't realize that they had left that section out. And apparently nobody caught it, including myself, or I would have had it added then. I apologize, but apparently it just wasn't added. And I went actually back to my old folder, HB6, and it was actually omitted there too. So I was thinking, well, maybe the map changed. No, it was omitted there too with the original. So I apologize that I did not catch it myself. It was just they gave us the coordinates and we went with it. I apologize. Thank you. Senator Rauscher for the record.
Follow-up, Senator Wilikowski?
Senator Rauscher.
Further questions? Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you. That seems familiar because we've had bills like this that often change section easements and things like that. And the committee, where we passed a bill on Creamer's Wildlife Refuge when I was in the House, that had to be vetoed because it took over somebody else's land by mistake. And so we had to redraft it. Anyways, it's a mess. But are you 100% sure this is correct? And do we have somebody that can testify that this is the right survey?
To the chair, Senator Kawasaki, the best I can tell you right now is there is the DNR right arm behind me, Mrs. Collis, and if she would like to testify for that, I can let her.
Ms. Collis, would you join us?
For the record, Christy Collis, Director for the Division of Mining, Land, and Water, Department of Natural Resources. Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, we've had our surveyors look at this multiple times, and they are confident that this is the correct legal description. But as I stated earlier, I know these legal descriptions can be cumbersome, but they checked it last year. They checked it again this year. We feel good about it.
Very good. Further questions, either for Ms. Collis or Senator Rauscher? All right, seeing none, thank you. At this time, I will open public testimony on this bill. Is there anyone here in the room that wishes to testify on Senate Bill 230? Seeing no one, I see no one online either, so I will close public testimony, though I do see we have a letter submitted in public testimony and support as well. So at this time, we'll set Senate Bill 230 aside. I will open public testimony again if more public wish to speak to it. I also would like to set an amendment deadline for this bill for this coming Friday at 5 p.m. All right, moving on, we're next to Senate Bill 200, Farm and Agricultural Land Assessments. This is a bill from Senator Jesse Bjorkman, Senate District D, and he is accompanied by Laura Achi, his staff. Online, let's see who we have. We should have Sandra Mahler, who is here at a division of Director, Division of Community and Regional Affairs, and Dan Nelson, who is the State Assessor. Also online, it looks like Rita Jo Schultz, Executive Committee Board Member of the Farm Bureau in Homer. So all these folks are here, as well as Senator Bjorkman. Welcome. I'll let you introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairman, Mr. Vice Chair, members of the esteemed Senate Resources Committee. My name is Senator Jesse Bjorkman. I represent the northern and central portions of the Kenai Peninsula. The bill before you, Senate Bill 200, is a bit of a cleanup bill from the farm bill that we passed a couple of years ago to clarify just a few simple things. Alaska continues to face persistent food insecurity, and our dependence on imported food leaves us vulnerable. The vast majority of what we eat arrives from outside, much of it routed through the Port of Seattle and then the Don Young Port of Alaska. Any disruption to these critical hubs could have an immediate and severe consequence for families across our state. Strengthening Alaska's own agricultural capacity is not optional. It is essential to building a resilient food system that can withstand shocks and protect our communities. State law recognizes the importance of keeping agricultural land in production by allowing farms to be assessed at a farm use rate for property taxes. This policy helps ensure that farmland remains farmland and not to be converted to other use. In 2024, the legislature updated these statutes in response to direct feedback from farmers and recommendation from the 2023 Alaska Food Strategy Task Force. Those changes streamlined the application process and ensured that essential farm structures, such as barns, are included in that farm use assessment. However, an unintended consequence of those revisions excluded farms who operate as S-corps from qualifying for the agricultural tax rate. New language relies on the IRS Schedule F to verify farm income. However, S corporations do not file a Schedule F. Senate Bill 200 corrects this oversight by allowing S corp farms to submit the equivalent information to local assessors, assuring that they are treated fairly and consistently with other agricultural operations. Current statutes also limit the farm use assessment to farms producing food for people or for food-producing livestock operations. While this reflects the urgent need to increase in-state food production, it does not reflect the full reality of Alaska's agricultural economy. Feedback from farmers and agricultural organizations has made it clear that Alaska's agriculture sector is interconnected and mutually supportive. Operations such as growing hay for horses and peony farms contribute very much to the stability of the entire farm industry in our state. They help sustain the suppliers, service providers, and infrastructure that food-producing farms rely on. If we want Alaska's food producers to succeed, we must support the broader agricultural ecosystem that makes their work possible. Senate Bill 200 updates statutes to reflect this reality and ensures that all legitimate agricultural operations, including those that support food production indirectly, are eligible for that farm use assessment. Today, as you mentioned, Madam Chair, we have Rita Jo Schultz, a peony grower, who can speak directly to the importance of this legislation. And we can also walk the committee through a sectional if you like. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator Bjorkman. Yes, if you could take us through the bill, identifying where the different elements are.
Chair Giesel, it would be my pleasure. My name is Laura Ashe. I work for Senator Jesse Bjorkman. Section 1 of the bill amends 2945.060B. This is a section of statute that describes the process for farmers to apply annually for the municipal property tax deferral. The change to this section allows farms that operate as S corporations to be eligible for the municipal property tax deferment by allowing those S corps to submit the same information to their local assessor that is found on an IRS Schedule F. Section 2 would amend 2945.060F, which is the section of statute that describes the process for first-year farmers who do not yet have a year of sales to make them eligible for the property tax deferment. The change in this section is also to allow farms that operate as an S-corp to qualify by submitting the same information that's on an IRS 1040 Schedule F. Section 3 of the bill changes 2945.060G, which defines what farm use is for the purposes of the municipal property tax exemption for agricultural operations. It amends G1A to allow eligibility for agricultural operations that do not grow food for humans or livestock that will become food, including peony farmers and hay for horses. The changes in this section also add new language that clarify that land that is part of the farm but isn't in production should be included in the agricultural assessment if it is part of an approved soil conservation plan. This would include windbreaks, as Senator Bjorkman mentioned. Adds new language excluding marijuana operations from this agricultural assessment and provides a definition for S-corps. And then Section 4 provides for an immediate effective date.
Very good. Thank you. Yes, and are there questions for the bill sponsor? Senator Willikowski.
I'm mildly curious as to page 3, line 7, the inclusion of horses there. Under livestock.
Yes, thank you for the question, Mr. Vice Chairman. That definition there, it does not pretend to presume that folks are eating horses, rather that they are growing food to feed the horses that folks would ride. So folks can use those horses to work cattle. Also, when hay is in production to be fed to horses, the ground that is growing that hay is remaining arable or able to be farmed, and it is preserved for farm use. Yeah. Contributing to that agricultural ecosystem we talked about.
Further questions for the bill sponsor? Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you. Thanks for bringing this forward, Senator Bjorkman. Question about the deferments. When exactly are the municipal property tax deferred due then?
Through the chair to Senator Kawasaki, any deferred taxes would be due upon conversion of the land to another farm use. So this bill does not broach the subject of changing that. It simply amends who would qualify for the deferments. But in practice, the deferments work by saying that a property owner would benefit from their assessments being calculated at the farm use rate when their property and their buildings are used for the purposes of farming. If they choose not to utilize that land or buildings for farming anymore, then they would have to pay the deferred rate of the tax.
Follow-up, okay. Senator Kawasaki?
I mean, so I'm just trying to figure out a deferment versus just a lower tax is what it is. It's not a deferring tax to a future time. It's making all of that land that's considered farm use under this bill less taxable or not taxable.
through the chair to Senator Kawasaki. Yes, that is correct. And the reason for the deferment is designed to be an encouragement that that land remain under farm use, that it be used to continue to grow things.
Okay, thanks.
Senator Rauscher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, so how are nonprofit corporations handled in this?
Senator Berkman.
Through the chair to Senator Rauscher. It's a great question. The subject of nonprofits and property tax has been one of, I would say, general contention of late. In fact, just the short answer before I tell you more of a story. Most nonprofits have very little or zero property tax implications. However, many assessors have been trying to carve up nonprofit property so that they can tax as much of it as possible through how they are dividing and apportioning different parts of parcels. So although nonprofits are not really broached or considered in this bill, and it's never been brought up before, to my knowledge, when talking about this, I am unaware of any nonprofits being negatively implicated by the portions of this bill, but I'm always excited to learn more.
Follow-up, Senator Rauscher.
I'm not sure yet, so I'll move on.
No worry. We will be able to talk about this more later. Further questions for the sponsor? We do have invited testimony. Rita Jo Schultz is a peony farmer, executive committee board member of the Farm Bureau. Ms. Schultz?
Madam Chair, honorable members of the Senate, esteemed colleagues, and distinguished guests. For the record, my name is Rita Jo Schultz. I'm the owner, along with my son Shannon and his wife Diane, of Alaska Perfect Peony in Fritz Creek. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I'm speaking in support of Senate Bill 200. This bill is very important to Alaska's horticulture industry. Farming in Alaska is already challenging due to our short growing season, high costs, limited infrastructure. Property taxes on agriculture land can add another layer of pressure, makes it harder for farms to survive and grow. Senate Bill 200 provides important real property tax relief by recognizing the agricultural value of farmland. This will help farmers keep their land in production instead of being forced to sell or convert it to non-agriculture uses. The bill will also help farmers monetize their land in ways that keep agriculture viable. Many farms today diversify through activities such as farm tours, farm stays, and other agritourism opportunities. These activities help sustain farmer families while introducing visitors and residents to Alaska agriculture. Alaska's peonies and floriculture are now known around the world. Senate Bill 200 helps ensure the land that grows and remains in agriculture continues contributing to Alaska's economy and allows future generations of farmers to continue stewarding this land. Thank you for your time and considering this important legislation.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Schultz. Any questions for Ms. Schultz? I do see a letter in the packet from the Alaska Farm Bureau supporting the bill. We also have Dan Nelson, as I said, state assessor, and Sandra Moeller, director of Community and Regional Affairs, DCCED. Any questions for those folks? I will note there is a zero fiscal note from DCCED. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This might be for the assessor. I'm just curious about the fiscal impact because I did see the zero fiscal note, but I guess this, do we have any sense of how much this might impact local communities, if at all?
Mr. Nelson?
Through the chair, I would have to, Senator Wojciechowski, I would have to do some research and see how it is impacting the local assessors, but it would be located. Impacting those that have farms, including Anchorage, the Kenai Peninsula Borough, Fairbanks North Star Borough, and the Matanuska Borough.
Senator Bjork, Senator Bjorkman, do you have a sense of the local impact of assessments?
Thank you. Through the chair to Senator Wilikowski, in your packets there are a couple of tables about the Farm Use Land Assessment Program and its summary. From the Alaska Taxable Report, pages 52 and 53, you can get a sense there as to those values in total and per acre.
Senator Wilikowski.
And I don't see Anchorage, and I'm just curious because I know there's a number of people have horses down in like South Anchorage from your district. I'm just curious how this might impact them, if at all.
Sure. Ms. Ashe.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, one thing to keep in mind is that until 2 years ago, any agricultural operation that had horses or raised hay for horses would have qualified for the deferment. So you would have seen them in the previous years. And to be clear, these tables are not an assessment of the bill, but just a report on what's happening in our municipalities. So if you're not seeing anything from Anchorage on the table, that means that there's not folks there that are applying for property tax deferrals. There are folks that aren't aware that they exist. So,
Ms. Ashe, in Anchorage, there's also at least one orchard. And so what you're suggesting is perhaps they don't know that there could be a property tax deferment.
Madam Chair, I can't say for certain that that would be why that particular property isn't getting the deferral. Perhaps they're not aware. Perhaps there's other reasons why they wouldn't qualify. But I have run across farms, and as we've been working on these bills for the last few years, I've run across agricultural operations that I thought would be well aware of this and were surprised to find out about it. So it is the case.
Thank you. I'm going to instruct my staff to check with the municipality of Anchorage with that question. Further questions? Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you. This might be a question for the state assessor. Yeah, I know we've been talking about this as a deferment, but is this an exemption to their taxes? So is a farm currently that produces carrots, for instance, is that land that's underneath that farm exempted from tax, or what is that exemption? How does it manifest itself?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, State Assessor Dan Nelson is detailed in AS 29.45.060A. If the land is sold, leased, or otherwise disposed of for uses incompatible with farm use or converted to a use incompatible with farm use by the owner is liable to pay the amount equal to the additional tax at the current mill levy together with 8% interest for the preceding 7 years, as though the land had not been assessed for farm use purposes.
Okay.
Follow-up, Senator Kosky.
So this is a deferment. Oh, excuse me, sir. I was just saying that this is a deferment.
Good. Thank you. And then thank you for clarifying that. To follow up, so could I – if I wanted to start tomorrow and create a farm, what would be necessary under this bill to get a deferral if I were to change my currently valued land into a farm?
Through the Chair, Senator Kawasaki, yes, it's detailed in the bill the steps that you'd have to do, but there'd be a application and the F schedule showing sales of $2,500 in farm agricultural products.
Gotcha. Follow up, Senator Kawasaki.
Just one final question, because I know we want to preserve farmland for human and animal consumption, but we also want land for housing, for instance. What happens, I guess, I guess, does this – could a person, say, have a huge swath of land, decide that it's – and get this farm – get this farmland benefit and then just hold it as farmland just so that they can be exempted from taxes.
Mr. Nelson?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, I would not – it would be looking into their what their investment criteria would be.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Bjorkman, did you have a comment on that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, through the chair to Senator Kawasaki. As we discussed the bill in previous form, when it, the bill that we're changing here in 2024, assessors have the ability to adjudicate land use for the use that it is in producing food or not. And so some farms have windrows or other other parts of their land that they keep in forest for as part of a soil conservation plan. And it is our vision that that would qualify for a farm use. But folks cannot simply just hold large chunks of land and have that qualify for this farm use exemption if they're not actually using the land and the qualifying buildings to produce food for people, flowers, or hay for horses. They can't just – they will not get the deferment specifically if the land is not part of what folks would recognize as a farm. Ed, go ahead.
Ms. Ashit?
Madam Chair, if I may add to that question through the chair to Senator Kawasaki. If you look on page 2 of the bill, down in section 3, you can see the statutory language that's being amended. And so you can see there that it does require sales of at least $2,500 of agricultural products each year.
Okay.
Senator Klayman.
So going back to the tax deferment and the earlier reference by the assessor about the, I think, the 7-year look back, on some level this is a tax deferment, but on another level it's a tax exemption, because if I have my farm for 20 years and then after the 20th year I sell it, the first 13 years the new owner will not have to go back and pay the taxes that would be owed. The look back is only for 7 years, and so that, again, it depends how long you have it, how long you have it as a farm, but it becomes a sliding, it becomes an exemption for anything that's older than 7 years that you've had it and run it as a farm, if I'm tracking the statute language correctly. If I got that right, I'm seeing nodding
heads.
That's
correct.
Yes,
under the chair.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I understood the deferment features. Thank you.
Senator Rocher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, through the chair, I was just wondering, I believe you can raise trees, and that's a farm, correct?
Senator Bjorkman?
A tree farm.
So thank you. So,
Senator Rocher.
So I was wondering, if you were to buy, like, say, 100 or 200 acres of tree land and sell firewood, are you now an agricultural farm?
Through the chair to Senator Rocher, that concept of a tree farm, or whether it be for firewood, timber, Christmas trees, veneer logs, any other forest products, is not contemplated under this bill as for agricultural purposes, although I support tree farms.
Senator Rocher.
Follow up. So it's not in this bill, but is it recognized as agricultural land?
Through the chair to Senator Rocher, I have not heard any contemplation of tree farms being included in a farm tax or farm use type of deferment under a model like this.
All right, thank you.
So another – were there other questions? All right, then I'll ask one. So the $2,500 of agricultural products. So here's another scenario. Bell's Nursery is in my district. Mr. Mazayan grows tomatoes, cucumbers, etc., sells them. I suspect he probably makes a net of $2,500. Would this qualify as agricultural land?
To the chair, Senator Bjerpen, for the record, that question, I don't know. It's a good question. I don't believe that the state assessor has chosen so in the past that I'm aware of. However, it's one thing that we could clarify.
All right. Thank you. Further questions on the bill? Senator Klayman.
Madam Chair, you actually asked a question. Is the $2,500 gross or net?
To Senator Klayman through the chair, it is in sales. It's gross.
Thank you. Good. All right. Well, at this time, I'm going to open public testimony. Is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify on Senate Bill 200? Seeing none, I don't see anyone online either. So at this time, I'll close public testimony. We also have Sandra Mahler online from DCCED, if anyone has any questions for her. All right, seeing none. At this time, we will set the bill aside. However, I would like to set an amendment deadline for this coming Friday at 5 p.m. And we will bring the bill back up again for further discussion. We will touch base with the assessor in Anchorage to find out certainly about the orchard that is located on Rabbit Creek Road, quite popular, and see what they're doing in terms of assessing it as farmland. Thank you very much, Senator Bjerkman, for bringing the bill. So this concludes our meeting for today. Our next meeting will be Wednesday, March 18th at 3:30 p.m. At that time, we will be hearing again Senate Bill 275, Natural Gas Projects, Income Tax and Surcharge. Gaffney Klein will be present as invited testimony. And if we have time, we will have public testimony as well. So at this time, the meeting will stand adjourned. Let the record reflect the time is 4:41 p.m.